This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the first 2017 edition of PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I'm glad that y'all are back for this new year. If we're cheating, this is actually our fourth year together, but we actually started like in the later part of 2014, so we're fudging, but we're still around. You know, the NBA is past its Christmas slate, which means things are getting serious, things are getting hot and heavy. We got a lot of stuff to kind of get into as we roll into the new year. I'm one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich. I'm joined by my hard partying, you know, hard crashing, now hoarse voiced Adam Murray. How are you doing?
That's just par for the season. This is the usual winter of voice change for many weeks, and
it's the winter of hangovers, is what it is, because you went out too long on New Year's Eve.
This was the first New Year.
Is that the reason Mariah Carey was so like messed up last night? You and Mariah were partying last night.
I don't even know why people think she'd be good, and you know, it's all. Oh, it's all irrelevant these days.
What's all irrelevant? Just
the year in general? Oh, we need to talk about something. Oh, Mariah, well, that's big news for the day. No, not really.
No, it's not. Well, I mean, Mariah Carey didn't die along with the thousands of other celebrities that did, but her career may have died.
Yeah, we're not getting into celebrity deaths. That was grossly overrated as well.
When you say celebrities' deaths being grossly overrated, do you mean like the belovedness of the celebrities that died?
Yes, the beloved. Oh, look at me. I can post a picture to show I care. George Michael, what has he never had a comeback from all his scandals? We were waiting for it 10 years ago. Yeah. Nothing happened. Prince, his last show was in an 8,000-seat theater. If he was as beloved as people thought he was, how come he's not selling out football stadiums like Springsteen or Billy Joel? You know, it's one of those things.
Well, I think we're kind of reaching the point with the celebrities where people who are sort of – you can't call it the baby boomers, because the baby boomers was a generation before us. You know, you and me talking to – you know, just talking to one another, you know, being in our like late 30s, early 40s or whatnot. Like these are the celebrities that are kind of like at their peak of popularity in like the 1980s, some of them the late 1970s. And these are the ones that are starting to drop, you know. Now, I will say this. The in memoriam for basketball this year – outside of Craig Sager, which was just a, you know, an eventual but very, very sad tragedy for succumbing to leukemia. The in memoriam for the basketball side was sort of tame, but if you look at the ones that died, it was people like John Johnson, and who was like a big star in Iowa that played for the Sonics in the late 70s.
Well, there was the one who got
Nate Thurmond, Bryce DeJean Jones.
I was just going to mention him, but
that's stuck out.
The NBA was sort of overshadowed by the tragedy of the baseball one, the Florida Marlins pitcher.
I cannot remember his name. Someone would kill me.
Hernandez.
He was a big time ace prospect, and it turned out he was died in a boating accident. But then they found out that he may have had drugs in his system.
Yeah, but it was just one of those high speed boat accidents, and that was overshadowed by football with all the, you know, Rashan Salaam and.
Well, the football is just like a walking tragedy. You literally watch the games and you're like, yep, that one's going to die early. You know, I hate to be that morose, but it's one of those ones where you crash hard.
There's a difference between crashing hard and then, oh yeah, he shot himself in the park. It's just like, oh, that's kind of weird. That's kind of not good.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, all together, death is not fun. Nobody likes it. But 2017 is here. It's a new year. We'll move on. But I will say this, though, Adam, because you've been seeing on social media a lot. Oh, can 2016 just end? This is the worst year ever. 2017 is going to be a lot better. How do you know that? I mean, the world might blow up in 2017. You don't know anything.
You know? It's one of those, you know, your internet personality, and you know that takes a hit. But for the most part, all these things you bitch about on social media don't affect your daily life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Carrie Fisher dying. Oh, well, she was in movies I loved 30 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah, she was just in bit roles now. George Michaels, I said, hasn't done anything. Oh, the guy from MASH died. Zsa Zsa Gabor. Oh, you know.
Yeah. Now I will say, when somebody puts like a very small like epitaph, I'll do it on Facebook too. That doesn't bother me too much. Now, the people that are like, I'm absolutely crushed, and they write paragraphs upon paragraphs of like how this is affecting their life. It's just like, come on now. You know, like you've got a life to live. You know, we had an election. It didn't go everybody's way, and it's okay. You know, we got to usher that one in pretty soon, and you know, you got to just roll with the punches and move on. Speaking of moving on, have the Golden State Warriors gotten over the Christmas game yet?
It was just one game, didn't we? We predicted Cleveland would win in a nail biter. So
I said Golden State. I just had a feeling that they would just – and I looked pretty good for the most part. And then in the last 5 minutes, it was almost like a rewind of game seven. They couldn't score. They couldn't score in the last 3 minutes of the game. It just became very difficult. The game got super tight. They couldn't run the sets that they wanted because they were switching – because Cleveland did a really good job of mixing up switching with zone. And Golden State just could not make outside jump shots. That's really what it came down to. And also, Kyrie Irving, Curry and Klay are the best backcourt in the NBA. They cannot guard Kyrie Irving, Adam. They simply cannot guard him.
Yeah, because neither of them are really defenders. And as we see yet again, it's just one of those, well, you have Zaza Pachulia, who didn't play hardly any, and
yeah,
you're just...
And then they go to their new death lineup, which has Iguodala in it, but Iguodala's kind of lost a step a tad. He's not, you know, there was one where Iguodala, I thought, had... Iguodala had a pass. He passed out on an outlet to Durant, but he didn't get it. He didn't pass it well enough, and Kyrie just took it out of Durant's hands. If Durant gets that dunk, the game's probably over, because that was within about, like, that was with about 2 or 1.5 minutes to go. You know, it was just, it was a sloppy game. But it was a very well-played game, I would say.
And, you know, let's not forget they have no bench, and that's going to continue to haunt them throughout the playoffs.
You're talking about Golden State?
Yeah. Golden State. And also, Cleveland didn't have J.R. Smith.
They're being dinged by J.R. Smith, just like I was about to say. DeAndre Liggins, they've been having to depend on just to kind of fill that role as like a 3-and-D, like a very mini 3-and-D guy. You know, he's not exactly a guy who can play that role, but they need somebody in that slot. So they got him. They needed a really good game out of Shumpert, you know, more good play out of Shumpert. In fact, I think the next day after Christmas, they went to Detroit to play the Pistons, and LeBron decided not to play. And that was actually – and even though they lost the game by 16, that was actually one of Iman Shumpert's best games. So you can tell that he's sort of coming back into form from after having a really rough 2016 season. Kevin Love's still looking good. Kyrie Irving is an all-star. The Warriors bounced back okay after that loss because of the fact that they beat the Raptors a second time, this time in Golden State. It got close late. But the Warriors pulled it out. Then Durant got a triple-double against a lowly Mavericks team. Should they just give it up now? Are we in give-up mode with the Mavs?
Well, yes. But there's nothing they can really do because they don't have any developmental prospects they can play.
That's why they had to sign Pierre Jackson out of nowhere.
Which is a nice story because, you know, he was somebody who was too good for the D-League, then... was about to get his chance in Philly, then tore his ACL, had to go to Europe, and then managed to bounce back. And Dallas is just one of those, you know, you couldn't predict that Dirk would be out pretty much the entire season thus far. And, you know,
and
Harrison...
when he plays, he's not all there.
Yeah, you know, Harrison Barnes is doing good. It's just, well, you know, you patchwork and patchwork and patchwork, and you trade your, you know, first-round picks every year to get more patchwork veterans in, and... you know, this is what happens.
Is this an example that moneyballing and free agency might just doesn't work in the NBA like it does in baseball, maybe in football too, where you just kind of get solid players to fill their roles? Like getting Seth Curry and Dorian Finney-Smith and guys that are just kind of somewhat efficient in their roles in a minuscule type of way or in an advanced stat type of way, that it can help you, but if they're not stars, if they're not guys that can transcend their position, like Giannis Antetokounmpo or somebody like that, that it's not going to be as effective throughout, you know, for an entire season as you would expect. I think the Pelicans kind of are suffering through this with their free agent acquisitions. But, you know, I mean, do you feel like it just didn't work out for Dallas?
Well, Dallas, you know, for one, it's people like, you know, Finney Smith and was it Justin Anderson, and
who's had a horrible season so far.
You know, they are meant to be the bench. When you Seth Curry was meant to be the backup, you know, third string point guard. He's not meant to be paying 30 minutes a game. You know, it's nobody's fault that, okay, we got Deron Williams. He's 33, whatever. He's going to fall off soon. Well, we'll try to ride him as far as we can. Well, yeah. Now the wheels fell off. There's no, these guys should be playing. The same thing with the Pelicans. Etuan Smith, Etuan Moore,
Tim Frazier.
Those were solid backups. That's what New York did last year.
Yeah,
they got people. Okay, this is our bench. They're good, but they shouldn't be playing 30 minutes.
Now they are making a little bit of a run on our end. You know, they had to win over the Clippers where. This was funny. Chris Paul plays like a good portion of the game, and then he sits the last possession, like the crucial final possession, which the, you know, the Clippers don't connect on, and the Pelicans win the game. And Rivers said that because of a minute restriction, they didn't let Paul play the last 14 seconds of the game, which is kind of funny. I didn't understand that, but whatever, I'll take it. The Pelicans win the game. They beat the Knicks on New Year's Eve. I was actually at a Buffalo Wild Wings because – that was playing around the same time that they were gearing up for the Ronda Rousey Amanda Nunes fight, which was not really a fight. It was more of a mugging, more of a stoning, actually, to be honest with you. But anyways, the Pelicans are on a run. They're still, I think, 6 games under 500, but they're getting there. Let me see. Yeah, 14 and 21, which is actually tied with Portland, 2 games behind Sacramento and Denver. But here's the thing. I don't think it's because the small acquisitions are working out, even though Frazier gave him, you know, has given him some good play. Langston Galloway's a good shooter. But I think it's really because Drew Holiday is coming back into form, you know, coming back into the lineup.
Well, yes. And we always knew how, you know, we know he's a good player. He's just fragile. Another thing is, which is the probably the worst position that the Pelicans could be in, the same thing with the Kings. They are not bad enough to be tanking to blow everything up. So you're going to have delusional people in the front office like, we need to make our playoff push. We could do it. Let's, you know, trade for more bad deals. And, you know, let's, you know, Buddy Hield still needs to be coming off the bench for 12 minutes. And Sheik Diallo needs to not play. And
yeah, you would rather be like the Nuggets, where the Nuggets are a team where, you know, first of all, they stockpiled a bunch of draft picks because they shipped away a lot of their previous regime type of players. But what it is they're good enough to be a threat in the regular season, but they're also bad enough because of their youth to just like absolutely tank a month, get into and then find themselves in a good lottery draft pick that they can just stockpile. And also drafting well in those later picks is also very, very important. We might talk about that another day. But yeah, I guess you want to be the Nuggets. You don't want to be the Pelicans where you have a transcendent star like Anthony Davis, but you gotta – and you're trying to find a way to make it work, but you don't really have the foresight to do it. The Kings, we know what their problem is with DeMarcus Cousins, you know?
Yeah, and they're going to be like, well, we're too good, so we can't get rid of Rudy Gay. Yeah, he's leaving. We got to keep DeMarcus Cousins. Yeah, he's probably going to leave too. And, you know, it was like the same thing with, you know, Utah is the perfect example. If you have young players, let them all play, let them learn. We're going to lose.
And don't mess up the draft. That's the other part. Don't mess up the draft. And they even – and you know what? They kind of did with Trey Burke. You know, they like they realized, okay, we made a mistake here. Let's let him walk or trade him for something. And then, but then they got some other ones like Gobert that same year. Then they get Rodney Hood, and then they get Trey Lyles, and they sort of kind of build their way from there. We talked about this, I believe, on a previous episode. If anybody wants to go back, I think it was about maybe like the episode before this one, or maybe the one before that, about how the Utah Jazz are going to be in a really tough situation cap wise next summer, because anytime you have bright prospects like that and you become good, you suffer, your cap has to suffer, you know?
Well, then the same thing another team is going to suffer is Golden State.
Like, well, absolutely.
They basically have to win now because there's no way they could keep Iguodala next year, who's a free agent.
What's the reasonability of not keeping that one seed? They've been holding on to it since like mid-November, but at 29-5, they're good. But you know, San Antonio is still right there, about a game or a game and a half behind. And then the surging Houston Rockets at 26-9, who have given the Warriors a lot of trouble every time they play them. They're about, I want to say, three games back, three and a half. You know, they're right there too. Now the Clippers have suffered since Paul has been sitting out some time, because Paul is like their Mr. Everything so far in this season, along with Blake Griffin's injury too, obviously. But I mean, what's the reasonability of Golden State keeping that one seed?
Should be pretty good.
Okay, so you think they're solid there?
They're not the undefeated team people thought they'd be at the beginning of the, you know, preseason. You know, oh, they're gonna go, you know, 80-2 and blah blah blah.
I would still. I think it's going to be the kind of team that goes like 69-13. I don't think – I said 70. I don't know if they'll get to 70. Like, I'm just not – I'm not absolutely sure this time. You know, I might have to go back on that prediction. You know, I think they wanted to get the 70 wins. I don't think it's possible. I think they're going to drop at least two more games before the All-Star break, which is going to be like a month from now, which is reasonable. I mean – any team, I mean, if you lose two games in a month, you had a great, you know, the midway point is more like the middle of January, or is it more like late January? Like late January?
Yeah, a couple weeks before All-Star break.
Exactly. So, like, if you lose two games between now and then, that's great. I mean, you had a great, like, stretch. So, like, and that'll be seven losses at the midway point. And then if you continue that, you'd be well over the 10-loss mark. But, I mean, that's nitpicking. I mean, a great year is a great year. You know, the other one is whether or not Cleveland can manage to take the home court away. They're at 25-7. It's possible, Adam, but I just don't think they have that, like, that every game potency that the Warriors have to just blow people out every night.
Yeah, but again, the Warriors just need to stay healthy. Even if one player goes down, they're doomed.
Mm-hmm.
It would be like, we're like, oh, they can lose Klay Thompson, they'll be fine. No, because they don't have a bench to replace him.
Yeah, and I mean, do you really want to rely on Patrick McCaw? I mean, this is a crazy one. But what if Zaza goes down? You got JaVale McGee. I mean, you can't rely on JaVale McGee. In that Cavs game, every time McGee was out there, they killed him. You know, I mean, you can't do that. You know, the other one I wanted to kind of talk about is, or just give you like a little podium to stand on, even though you're not going to be able to talk too loudly on that for your speech, is the Boston Celtics. Give you your sort of like every episode little take on how Boston is doing. Isaiah Thomas's 29-point fourth quarter against the Heat, like where would you put that like in your like fandom rankings of like, oh, that's my guy type of Celtic moment?
I don't know, because it just didn't, you know, it was one of those not like, it was just one of those, you didn't expect, it didn't seem like one of those superstar performances.
Well, here's the thing about Isaiah, he does this all the time in the second half of games.
That's the thing, it's just all like, you know, it's not like, oh, he hits like four threes in a row and gets it. It's like, okay, there's a three, then he'll, you know, drive to the basket, lay up, then it's a varied game. It's just, you just forget, it doesn't seem superstar-ish, is what I'll say.
Yeah. 52. They needed every shot out of him to beat Miami in that game. It was just a game where they were just struggling the whole night.
They just lost a brutal game the night before to Cleveland, which they battled back from, gotten to within one. So they
and
were
that
already
was one of that was one of LeBron's worser games. Am I correct?
Yeah,
like where he didn't play great. You know, Kyrie was sort of the dude that was kind of like stepping in there, and Cleveland lost that game on TNT. So yeah, you can keep going though.
Yeah, it was the second day of a back to back, which you don't expect. You know, you always have diminished returns anyways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the fact, you know, he, you know, had 52 points, I think, at the end.
52, yes.
Yeah, it's just not like, wow.
Two rebounds and one assist. I mean, I'm not gonna cry about the lack of efficiency, especially with triple double mania running wild, you know. But it's just one of those ones. We were just talking about like with how the second half for Isaiah. Like I'm pretty sure we've seen a couple of times where Isaiah got 34 and he had like 25 of the 34 in the second half. This was like the greatest hits. This is like he put it all in one quarter instead of one half. You know, it's almost like he obviously had to have 22 points going into the fourth, but it was almost like all that stuff that he does in the second half of games, he smashed into the fourth quarter. And it was just like one three after another after another. Tommy Heinsohn was losing his mind by the time he made the last one, you know.
Miami was hitting like every shot, and they were shooting like.
Yeah, Justice Winslow had a good game, I believe, that night. So,
you know, they were shooting like, I think, like 56% through the third quarter or something. It was something insanely high, and It was just one of those games. Like, it didn't seem like, you know, like Clay Thompson when he goes for 30 in a quarter. Like, oh, wow. It was a very smooth and just like, oh, there it goes.
Yeah. I mean, any worries so far about the Celtics? I mean, kind of the same. Like for example, you talk about the Cleveland game on TNT. Like, anything that kind of worried you?
No, Boston's not a good team. The problem is nobody below them is any better. They're just a jump shooting team. Nobody rebounds. They get out rebounded by at least 10 or 15 rebounds a game.
Mm-hmm.
Amir Johnson is, you know, they go, their whole thing now is let's go small ball. So Amir Johnson's out. Let's move Yurko in.
Can we officially label Kelly Olynyk a dirty player? This is like the fourth or fifth time against Cleveland where they've like gone after Olynyk. Or is that just still ramifications from the Kevin Love, you know, torso Mortal Kombat move?
That's just a vendetta type thing. That's not a, like, you know, a dirty player like Draymond Green. You know, up another game, another weird.
He's just a dick. He just does that to people.
Yeah, Grayson Allen. Okay, just tripping, you know, Long Beach State.
Don't you talk shit about Grayson Allen. That's my boy.
You know.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. We'll do our college soapbox for a second since I let you get on your Celtics one. This is all a plan. This is all, me and my friend Ryan talked about this. Ryan, who's been on the show before. This is all a plan. He's purposely leaving him out of the game so that they can drop games in conference play to show people how valuable he is. And when he comes back, he'll be more like focused than ever, and then he'll be the MOP of the NCAA tournament. Am I drinking the Kool-Aid here?
Yeah, kind of too much.
Well, I hope it ain't the Kool-Aid you drank since he can barely talk now.
It's just par for the course. No, because you don't want to drop conference games, especially the ACC, because who knows what, you know, the way the bracket falls.
Yeah, it's a strong conference game, so you don't want to, like, get too much into a rabbit hole of, oh, another loss, oh, another loss. Like,
yeah,
you don't
the whole
wanna...
suspended for however many games.
Indefinitely is the quote.
It'll be, like, 2 weeks. But yeah. That's just all media-driven and...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, okay.
I mean, we've had a very small taste of conference play. It's been fun. You know, I've already seen some surprising, like, results, like Indiana not looking as good as we thought, Virginia not looking as good as we thought. Just a couple of really surprising things. But, let's kind of shoot back over to, like, you know, dirty people committing dirty plays. But, yeah, Olynyk, that just might be a situation where every time he plays Cleveland, Cleveland's looking for a reason to sort of lash out at him. And there was a moment there with LeBron where LeBron and Olynyk got a little bit testy. And anytime LeBron is staring down a guy, you know the Cavs are going to run to his help, you know, because he's the leader. And so you could tell, you know, LeBron's trying to go after Olynyk. The other problem, too, is that, you know, they're getting more play out of Yurebko, which is good because they need that size. They need that rebounding to improve. The problem is that Marcus Smart is great at guarding small forwards, but he's a point guard on offense. So it's just – it causes a lot of friction when they're trying to run a certain set position-wise for their players on defense, and then they have to do something totally different on offense. You know, so I just feel like they haven't really found their lineups yet.
Well, like, you know, you said with just small ball, you have Marcus Smart, Yurebko, Olynyk. They all shoot threes.
Mm-hmm.
And Marcus Smart can't shoot for anything, but there's no – even Gerald Green, he's a three-point shooter. You don't have any low-down, low-post players other than Horford, who just wants to shoot threes now.
The 19-point game performance by Gerald Green was, like, one of the, like, the most, like, what-the-hell type of performances I've seen this year. I think that was against the Memphis Grizzlies, you know. But it was, like, one of those ones where it's, like – I'm not saying Gerald Green's, like, trash now, but it's, like – I just didn't expect it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's what he did in Phoenix, too.
Yeah, but he did that. I'll say this. Every night, though, he usually had a solid – because he was a starting three. You know, he was like – or he was either a starting three or he was playing behind P.J. Tucker at the three. You know, but he was getting a lot of minutes in Phoenix, just like everybody else gets a lot of minutes in Phoenix now because they don't really have anybody else. That's why they have Marquese Chris starting, and he's like the worst starter – real plus minus wise in the NBA because he's not ready and rookies should never play. I want to, you know, we were talking about Draymond Green, and we'll talk about Westbrook and Harden because, you know, I want to focus on that in a bit. But I want to talk about kind of the triple doubles that have been kind of being slouched around. Do you think the Westbrook-Harden race with the MVP, because to me it sort of is a race, even if it's on a subconscious level between the two, about, you know, who can be the alpha male of their team, who can carry their team to more victories. Do you feel like that getting a triple-double is like become sort of a thing in the NBA with the fact that they're kind of being given out more and more and more? Or do you think it's just happenstance, like Tim Frazier getting a triple-double against the Suns and Julius Randle getting a triple-double against the Nets? That sometimes, like, people just kind of, like, mess around and get a triple-double.
Okay, Ice Cube.
Why?
Today was a good day, Ice Cube.
What I said?
Last week, messed around, got a triple-double.
Oh, that's what it's from?
Wow, just okay. Just hang your head in shame. It's more happenstance because just look at the games. It's just if one player tries a little harder, it changes everything. Like Denver, Minnesota last week, the two top assist players were Anthony Towns and Jokic.
Nikola Jokic.
Yeah, yeah, they led each team in assists. That never happened.
Game though, entertaining game in Denver. Came down to the last play.
So yeah, it's just if one player just tries harder, you know, you could get, you know, Avery Bradley leads the Celtics in rebounds. It just takes one player to put a little more effort in everybody else because points are just at a premium. Everybody's shooting threes. Everybody's getting more points. So
yeah, well, Harden just tied the record with Will Chamberlain where he had 53 points. To go with 16 rebounds and 17 assists against a New York Knicks team that went without Porzingis and Carmelo Anthony just wasn't feeling it early and they pulled him. I mean, I don't know. Westbrook's had some pretty nutty performances too. You know, he's had some 50-point games with a triple-double in the past. But I mean, Harden's was that might be. I mean, Klay Thompson 60 points in three quarters was pretty amazing. That might be the most impressive performance I've seen this season so far, regardless of who you play.
But yeah, like, you know, like I mentioned, and I think we sort of agreed, they're playing for two different reasons. Westbrook has no other scorers. If you have Sabonis and Roberson on the court at the same time, neither of them are going to score, so you have to sort of facilitate a little more.
And it didn't help that Oladipo sat out some games due to injury. That really didn't help. Then he had to feed the ball inside to Adams on offense, which... You know, which is good if Adams is willing to, you know, go in for the finish, but it gives you one less guard to rely on.
Whereas Harden, you know, he has Eric Gordon just sits in one corner, Ryan Anderson sits in the other corner. Okay, I'll just kick him out. They'll shoot a three, easy assist.
Eric Gordon kind of, you know, finding himself again. I'm almost convinced now. I think I mentioned this every episode, but I'm almost convinced he sabotaged his entire second contract just so he can get out of New Orleans.
No, it's just, I think he's content being a six man.
Mm-hmm.
Come in, I'm just going to shoot, no expectations, as opposed to, well, you need to be the savior of the team. You're the face of the franchise. You're our first max contract in this new city, and, you know, you're going to be this cornerstone with Tyreek and Drew Holiday, and, you know, it needs to be you, as opposed to, yeah, we don't care what you do. Just go, you know, we call on you, you do your thing.
Is there one guy in particular between the two that has impressed you the most, whether it's just one game, one stretch, you know, or just in general what they're doing for their team between Harden and Westbrook? Because then that's going to probably be the raging MVP debate throughout the season, regardless of, like, a ton of other really good candidates like Durant, obviously LeBron, DeMar DeRozan. I know I'm missing a couple. Probably maybe Anthony Davis, but between those two, is there one that's impressed you the most?
No, because we knew Westbrook would do this. Mm-hmm. Harden, it's just like we think, you know, his stats are a little inflated from the system.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wouldn't have been scoring, you know, the team wouldn't be scoring 120 points every night.
Yeah, they had 140 in a game, right?
Yeah,
That was let me see who that was against. That was a wild one. I think it was against the Clippers. Where Paul didn't play, and they scored 140 points on the LA Clippers.
So yeah, your stats are going to be a little inflated if you're scoring that many.
Mm-hmm. I mean, are the Rockets a fun team to watch with the points, or is there like, because there, here's the thing, points are being spread out like crazy now in the NBA, scoring average is way up, but there are some high scoring teams that are not necessarily fun to watch. Are the Rockets fun to watch in your opinion?
Me personally, no, but I could see how they are.
Okay, now the Thunder are, because of just how Westbrook is. I just enjoy watching Westbrook dominate the game the way that he does. Harden does the same, but it's a little different with the assists.
Yeah.
You know, a little more of a ball stopper hardness. You know, whereas with Westbrook, he's got the ball all the time on every possession, but the ball moves. I just feel like the ball moves a little bit more for Oklahoma City than it does with Houston. Just a little bit. You know, and also, Houston, they take so many threes that it's like feast or famine. You know,
and
like
that's why the assists are so high.
Yes, exactly. Let me bring up a couple of other, like, the miscellaneous, as we always like, because you and I always like to mention, like, how did this guy do this? Like, we always talk about the Terrence Ross 50-point game. Let me give you some guys that have had triple-doubles. Westbrook has 16. No, I mean, we talked about that. Harden has 8. LeBron has 3, having a great year. Giannis Antetokounmpo. By the way, if you go to the fantasy line on Giannis Antetokounmpo, he's listed as a shooting guard slash he's listed as a point guard slash shooting guard slash small forward slash power forward. What position is Giannis Antetokounmpo?
Utility.
Oh, UTIL. Put him there in the
just
bottom.
Just the utility, no other position. Because
he seems like a point guard, but I mean, I watch a breakaway against the Bulls in a game that they won. He's literally dunking it like a step past the free throw line on a breakaway. Like, I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, it's just a dunk, but it just kind of like is just a showing of his athleticism. Like, he can play small forward. He can guard power forwards for the most part. You know, he's just – he's a guy that you can just rely on across the board. But Giannis has 2 of them. Kevin Durant just got his first one as a Warrior against the Dallas Mavericks. Karl Towns, you talked about that Nuggets game. Chris Paul got a triple-double against the Nets in that really crazy game where Sean Kilpatrick went off and it went to double overtime. Rondo got one against the Cleveland Cavaliers with the Bulls. Nick Batum with the Bull against the Bulls isn't too surprising, right? Isn't that Nick Batum's thing?
Yep.
Okay. Marc Gasol against the Pelicans. Draymond Green against the Pelicans. Thanks a lot. Now I'm going to give you the 3 that really stick out. Like a sore thumb. Julius Randle, which was very early in the season. Tim Frazier against the Suns. And then Malcolm Brogdon against the Bulls just this past weekend. Like, which one is the most, like, how did that happen type of triple-double?
Probably Malcolm Brogdon.
Because of
this, like, Tim Frazier, we knew he was getting, 40 minutes because of injuries.
Mm-hmm.
But Malcolm, he's like, he was a second-round pick. He's a rookie. How is he doing anything?
I'll say Randle. Randle just kind of – it was weird. The Nets are involved in, I think, 3 of these triple-doubles at the least. So, just a couple of other mentionables that we talked about. Randy Foy had that game-winning shot against the Hornets. The Nets are sort of a weirdly entertaining team despite how bad they are, because they are bad. They're last in the East right now. But, I mean, do you enjoy watching the Nets?
Well, they're competitive. It's like when you watch Philly, it's like, this is going to be a bad game. Embiid is going to get his 25 points, 10 rebounds, whatever, in his minute restriction, and nobody else is going to do anything.
Okay.
But Brooklyn, they keep it close. It's never usually a blowout. We know they're not going to win, but they're always close enough. It's like, well, we can't be too comfortable.
And they take a ton of threes. Oh, my goodness. Where are they in the 3 rank? I think they're like 2nd or 1st. In the attempts, Mark?
Well, if that's, you have no talent, what else can you do? Just practice shooting.
Yeah, with the big man shooting, with the Brook Lopez, who never took threes ever. Now all he does is take threes. Alex Abrines, we've always talked about him out of Spain. His rights were drafted, I think, in 2013 or 14. Finally came over this year because they finally had the roster spot and they needed some talent after Durant left for Golden State. He's starting to kind of come around. What is the identity for Alex Abrines, like, now that you're watching him sort of get into his groove as a guard in Oklahoma City?
Well, he might be the reason, they don't re-sign Roberson, which we sort of mentioned. It's like, okay, they brought him in. He was, MVPs of the Spanish League, all-star out there. Mm-hmm. So once he finds his rhythm, it's just a, you know, a catch shooter. He could have a little home here.
Mm-hmm. And I'll talk about two pairs of bigs. In Houston, Clint Capella went out with the knee injury. They had to plug in Montrezl Harrell. Harrell has actually played pretty well. You know, he's sort of the lob guy, kind of guy gets open underneath because of all the spread out with the threes by Houston. He had one really great game. I think he had like 27 points and double digit rebounds. Just a fantastic game for him. What kind of future do you see for Harrell?
A solid backup center.
Nothing more, though. Like, you don't see, like, maybe, like, a Capella type of run here. Because Capella is a starter in the NBA. Do you think Harrell could be that kind of guy?
I don't think he has that much of an offensive game other than just, like you said, lobs and...
Yeah.
To really, you know, he needs to develop beyond that. And, you know, last year he was injured, so it was like, okay...
And I have to mention this. Shinanu Anuaku debuts after the Capella injury since they needed another backup big. He does underhanded free throws. He attempted two, made them both, even though they rattled in. Can this be a trend in the NBA? You knew I was going to ask you this once this happened.
I don't see anything wrong with it. It's better than, you know, shooting 30% like was Greg Monroe.
Yes, yes. And Andre Drummond might benefit from
it. Drummond, it doesn't hurt, you know, style points, who cares if you're getting it in. Mm-hmm. It's all that matters.
What's the embarrassment of a granny shot? It's just kind of pride, I guess, at this point.
Yeah, it's just pride, and you know, I guess people would rather have you miss 30 in a row shooting it correctly as opposed to we'll go underhand and maybe get half of them.
Let's just kind of like, and also the other game I saw, even though it might be totally meaningless at the end of the day, the Kings played the Sixers. The Kings won 124-122. Entertaining little game, but the Sixers are garbage, and we knew this. Joel Embiid and DeMarcus Cousins had a nice little battle. Like, Embiid had like 28 points, 5 rebounds, and 2 blocks, and Cousins had, I want to say, like 30 and 7. 30 and 17, along with like three assists and 2 steals. DeMarcus is a guy. He's so frustrating because statistically he gives you everything you want, but he's so mercurial and he's such a pest when it comes to, like, you know, drawing technicals and just being a pain in the ass. But he does everything that you want him to do as a big man. He gave some mutual respect to Joel Embiid. Is that like a rare occurrence where, you know, a really like high tempered or a hot tempered type of big man gives props to another big man?
No, there's nothing wrong with, you know, the fact he's hot tempered is the fact he hasn't gotten it yet. And, mm-hmm. you know, the team would be way different if he had a little better attitude, but it's just one of those, okay, I can see Embiid's going to be a good player. You know, props to him.
Embiid, is that already set as rookie of the year? Do you feel like somebody like Jamal Murray might be able to make a run?
No, he's rookie of the year. You know, he also forgot he had 2 years to practice and get his strength and stand. Because, you know, he wasn't, you know, he was injured, but they also said, we're shutting you down for, you know, all this time because we can.
Yeah.
We're not going anywhere. Why rush you out? We're going to lose anyways.
Yeah. And he wasn't overweight when he finally came into play, which was the rumor. The rumor was that he was, like, super overweight while he was coming back from the foot injuries. That is definitely not the case. That was just a myth. He's come in. He's ready. His recovery time on defense, his footwork is really, really good, which is surprising because of how many problems that he has had. You know, but he's just been a terrific player. We still don't really have, like, we're still at the to-be-continued mark with Nerlens Noel. Is that accurate? I'm not really sure where we're at with that right now.
Well, that's just the coach killing the players. And
yeah, we're waiting till February, basically.
Lack of good coaching. And, you know, you can say the same thing. Okafor and Embiid can't play together. Mm-hmm. They're not complimentary. It's just Okafor, you know, he hasn't been happy there either. It's just...
But they like Okafor more than Noel in Philadelphia.
Yeah, they like him there. I would rather have Noel as a, you know, it's just a defensive anchor for Embiid, but... You know, if you have a coach who's just, you know, phoned it in for years because the organization didn't care, and well, now Hero is their first player, he's not happy, and then you don't hear much happiness come from Philly in general.
No, I think they're waiting for that one last draft pick, and I think with this one last one, they're probably, if you look at the how high, like, if at the top of the draft with the guards. They're going to probably draft a guard. I don't know who it's going to be, but I feel like that's going to be the goal. Utah starting to really look good. They had that really close win against the Lakers. They blew out the Sixers. They had an easy win against the Suns. They're now at 21-13, tied with Oklahoma City, still four and a half games behind Houston. I feel like we talk about them all the time. What's the peak here for Utah? At least this season.
They're kind of where they are. I think they're going to be as high as they're going to be. Because they're not going
to... Well, I didn't expect them to be like a first-round home team type, home court advantage type of team. I didn't expect that.
Well, the way everybody else sort of fell down, like they're not going to be better than, you know, the way Houston's playing, the way... San Antonio and Golden State, you're just at that second tier of groups, and since Portland's out, who was supposed to be there, there's not, and the Clippers are just awful.
Well, they're awful right now with Blake sitting out. They just have not been the same, you know?
Yeah, so they're going to be as good as they probably can be. Mm-hmm. They only could get back worse and be, but, you know, fall back to a 5 or 6 seed.
Yeah, and then when you go the tier below, Memphis, LA Clippers, Thunder, and Utah, then you got that real like muddling where you got like Sacramento, Denver, Portland, what a disappointment, and then New Orleans kind of fighting their way back in it with the run that they've had. Minnesota, Lakers, not the Minneapolis Lakers, the Minnesota Timberwolves and the LA Lakers, probably should have said it that way. Dallas Mavericks, Phoenix Suns, they're gone, they're done, it's over. I don't feel like Minnesota can make the run.
Yeah, and that's the problem with, you know, Dallas and Phoenix and, you know, Minnesota being so awful, you have these bad teams like New Orleans and Sacramento who are higher than they should be.
Yes, and they're trying to fight their way into it, convince themselves. I mean, with Vlade and Vivek Renadev, like, that's not surprising that they're convincing themselves that they can make this work with DeMarcus, because they're just finding any excuse known to man to convince DeMarcus to stay in Sacramento. That's really what that's about. With New Orleans, the disappointing thing is they're trying to win, but they don't have the right personnel. They're probably not good enough to get past an 8 spot, if they even get the 8 spot. And then you're not going to have a great draft pick. I still don't want to completely admit to the idea that Buddy Hield was a failure. I feel like it could still work. You know, he's had a couple of good
games. How do you know if the coach doesn't play him? And plays him 10 minutes in garbage time.
Yeah, he's not playing it. Well, he's playing a little bit more, which is surprising because Tyreke Evans just came back. So you would expect Buddy's minutes to go away. But that hasn't necessarily been the case in the most recent, like, few games. So Gentry, I think, is just messing around with the lineup. He's just trying to find anything. The one that's really kind of peaked lately is the Washington Wizards. What do you think of the Wizards now that they're back at 16-16?
They finally decided to show up, which is good.
Well, Wall's been good all year. Has he done anything differently? Has Beal done anything differently? Maybe it's Otto Porter. Where's the improvement coming from?
I don't know, because their bench is still garbage.
Yeah.
Their bench is still garbage. It has done absolutely nothing. It's just... the starting five has just decided to put it together, I guess, and decided to, I don't know, maybe it could be because they've had a, you know, an easy schedule. I don't know, but it looks like they're starting to get it.
Yeah, and also, you know, a little bit more Oubre coming off of the bench. I mean, we talk about how the bench is bad, okay, and it's true. But, you know, Oubre gives them a little bit of value. Trey Burke finally had a good game this year, 27 points. I can't remember who it was against, but it was in a win. It may have been against the Nets, actually. And then – the other one that's been kind of helping them out actually is Marcus Thornton. Marcus Thornton has actually been pretty valuable for them as sort of just like a microwave guard off of the bench.
Yeah, but that's, you know, can only last for so long. He's limited in what he does.
Oh, absolutely. Now, Sotirovsky, I don't know. I don't think he's really getting there yet. Like
he just doesn't seem to fit that system. Like he seems like he's not a 3. And I think they're trying to make him a 3. And
he's more of a Prigioni. Like, he's more of a guy that's like a playmaking point guard type
just
of guy.
Just a big point guard. And,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like Marco Jarić back in the day.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one. That's good.
And they don't want to play him there, and they're like, no, we have Burke, he's our point guard, and you have to play off the ball, and he can't play off the ball. So it's one of those, well, you have a player, you know, you don't play to his strengths. You know, is it him? Is it you? We don't know.
Yeah, and the Knicks are like that example of, like, you go into a show like the one we're doing here, you want to compliment them for doing well, like, you know, in the last month, and then they kind of, like, shit the bed, like, the next week, like, the few games after that. Like, the Knicks had a very good December getting themselves back into contention, and then they sort of – they lost that game to the Celtics on Christmas. Did you take any notes from that game in general?
Joakim Noah is not good.
Okay, and, you know, Carmelo Anthony decides, oh, yeah, I'm going to try to take a three to tie this game, and, oh, I just got stripped by Avery Bradley. I mean, not his fault. That's what Melo does, but it was just such a predictable set. It was like, wow, this is really what they're going to do to try to tie this game. And then, you know, they got destroyed by the Rockets on New Year's Eve. That was the one where Harden had the crazy 53-16-17 game. Just not great. Now, Derrick Rose is playing a lot better than I expected. I did not expect Derrick Rose to be as good as he's been in the last month. You know, and also not really sitting out too many games of injury. He'll sit one out every now and then, but not as often as you would expect. But, you know, the Knicks are just – they're just the kind of team that the moment you want to like them, they sort of push themselves back.
Yeah.
You know, the Bulls to me are just – they've just hit their wall. I feel like they've hit their wall.
The Bulls are just imploding.
Mm-hmm.
It's just – it's falling apart for them. The Rondo thing isn't working. The Hoiberg thing isn't working. You cash all your chips in to get Wade and Rondo, and you don't really have many assets for the future because you've benched Bobby Portis. You've made him irrelevant. So,
yeah.
You know, Mirotić has already said how unhappy he is.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of discord there.
Yeah, I mean, you got Charlotte's doing fine. They had the loss to Cleveland this weekend, but that's okay. There's no shame in losing to Cleveland. But Kemba Walker, please do not do a shimmy before the ball goes in. Even if it looks like it's going in, don't do it, because now you are going to be immortalized on Shaq Kingdom Full. That is the new Nick Young. Nick Young was the one that you saw all the time. Now it's going to be Kemba. Like, it was perfect camera work too.
Yeah, and that's the irrational swagger factor. Oh, but the one thing about Charlotte, I'm going to say, is, you know, Frank Kaminsky is shooting like 25% from three. But
yeah.
All he's doing is shooting threes still. Hasn't somebody said, look, don't do that?
I think they just fell in love with it last season with the threes. They were like one of the higher attempt teams. And I guess Steve Clifford just doesn't want to get away from that because it worked. You know, and it's just one of those situations where it's a culture thing. You know, Golden State falls into this trap too, where they take a few too many threes depending on who's taking them. Like, when Andre Iguodala takes a three, I'm like, yeah, you were open. The reason you're open is because you can't shoot threes. Like, maybe the percentages don't, like, kind of might disagree with what I'm saying, but, like, when I watch him in rhythm, I'm like, no, they need someone else to take that three instead of you. If Kaminsky's the one who on the rotation and on the kickout is open, doesn't mean you have to take it. How about a shot fake? How about penetrating and going to the basket, which is what he was actually good at in Wisconsin, you know?
Mm-hmm. You just become very one-dimensional, and if your one dimension's not very good, it's just – you know, Kemba Walker can only do so much.
And his delivery is so slow, Kaminsky's. Like, when it goes, it's like a shot put. Like, you're waiting for it to release. So, like, if you concentrate for too long, you know, there's a possibility of just the shot just being totally off. And that's what it seems like with Kaminsky, you know, just not great footwork. Cody Zeller's played well. I am very, very close to dropping Michael Kidd-Gilchrist in fantasy. He's making me very upset. But maybe that's just what MKG is. He's one of these guys that gets you blocks and steals. But in terms of offensive efficiency, especially with that hideous, hideous jump shot, it will never, ever be there, you know?
Nope, it's quite a disappointment for the number two pick.
Have you ever seen that really strange sideways shot that he takes now? Where it's all on the right shoulder.
It's just getting uglier and uglier and uglier.
It's just a weird shot. Like, he would never be able to take a three from the right corner. Like, the way that he shoots it, it is hideous looking. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of wrapping up the recent events for the most part in the NBA. If we missed anything, yeah, please please mention it to us. You know, you do the Twitter at Andrew Reich, A-N-D-R-E-W-R-I-C-H-E. Adam Murray has a Twitter, but it's
at Andrew Reich, A-N-D-R-E-W-R-I-C-H-E.
Yeah. You can send them ones to them, and I'll just send it to them via voice box. but you had something to kind of bring up as we finally put a close on 2016, but you want to sort of kind of creak the door open and mention something?
No, well, I can say that for another week, but one quick thing about 2017 that we mentioned earlier about the Timberwolves is they're going to get some money soon. Because the injury exemption from
Nikola
Pekovic, he's never going to play again, so they get his money back.
Wait, did Pekovic retire?
No, he didn't retire, but you can now cut him under injury. And it's one of those things, if they play
He hasn't played for longer than a year.
Uh-huh, When Darius Miles came back, you know, Portland had to pay. And Pekovic just said in an interview, he's like, I can't even run without hurting, so he's not coming back. He's in Europe managing his team, so they're going to get, you know, what is he, like a $14 million deal?
Yeah. He had about $13 million left on his last year of his contract. So
with that money opened, and you get, you know, him and, let's say, you know, a Shabazz Muhammad or Levine, you can now upgrade your roster.
Okay, now they freed up some of this cap space, which obviously people are going to be talking about, you know, going into their summer. But they do have a dilemma with the Andrew Wiggins, Zach LaVine extension thing. Now, it's not as problematic as the Thunder had, where they had three 2013 draft guys, where they had to basically make a choice of extending two and possibly letting one walk. But with Andrew Wiggins and Zach LaVine, they have the cap space. They have more cap space now because of the medical retirement exemption that they're basically going to get from the Pekovic deal. But do you think that it's something where maybe they should consider letting one walk, or do you think they should just go ahead and extend both of them?
Well, if you're going to extend both of them, that's your team. It's one of those you have to say is LaVine, is he going to grow into a all-star player?
LaVine's played well this year, and his three-point percentage is actually very high.
But he's horrible on defense.
True. The whole team is, though. Even Towns has not been great.
Him and Wiggins are both god-awful on defense, and that's the thing.
That's, you know, very disappointing for Wiggins, because that was supposed to be his go-to coming out of college. He was a very good one-on-one defender. And for him not to be that is somewhat disappointing.
So, you know, LaVine LaVine's not going to get a max contract, whereas Wiggins will. You know, LaVine LaVine's just a shade under right now.
Yeah,
so.
But LaVine will probably get about 19 to 20 mil. He'll get the Batum deal. That's what I'll say.
Yeah. And that's fine. And, you know, if you think he could grow into it, if he's just going to be that inconsistent, you know, he's playing well, but still a little inconsistent.
Mm-hmm. But, well, really what I was trying to get at is the idea maybe you should let Wiggins walk, or is that too risky?
I would rather keep Wiggins as a safer bet than LaVine LaVine.
Than LaVine LaVine. And then we're going to be coming down to the same deal with Chris Bosh in Miami. Now, that's a little more contentious because I think Bosh really does want to play again.
Bosh wants to play, and he says he's going to play. So
That's a Darius Miles situation where Memphis picked him up, and the Blazers were telling everyone in the league, you better not pick him up or we'll never forgive you. We'll never work with you again, you know, kind of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's an interesting. I mean, 2017, we got a whole lot of things to look forward to. I think we talked about sort of a bold prediction for 2017 in the last episode. I don't know if there's any other ones that you sort of want to add on to it as your voice is completely breaking down now. But
no, let's just all hope for positivity. You know, if Dallas is terrible, maybe they develop some, you know, they get a D-League player. Like, look at Miami and Brooklyn. They were able to get these players from the D-League out of nowhere. Maybe Dallas could get one too. It's something to look forward to in the future.
Yeah, that's going to probably bring up a topic that we're going to delve into. You and I always love talking about the 10-day contract guys in the D-League, because you always find a pretty decent player there. Sean Kilpatrick was one, you know, and so there's always a couple of them that you always have to keep an eye on, and we're both college fans, so we're going to do our D-League deep dive pretty soon, but this episode we just didn't have time. Did you watch any of the college football playoff?
It was totally unexciting.
It was a monsoon outside last night for New Year's Eve, which was great because I hate fireworks. I know it's weird, New Year's Eve, I hate fireworks. Maybe because I have a child now and I'd rather just get my good night's sleep. But the monsoon outside washed out our cable satellite. So I literally did not see the second half of Clemson, Ohio State. I actually tried to listen to it on my phone on ESPN radio, and then I actually fell asleep. It was so boring.
Yeah, neither game was really good.
No. At least Washington got the first touchdown against Alabama in the Peach Bowl. You kind of thought, okay, we got something going. And then Tim Williams got the pick six before the end of the first half, and it was like, uh-oh, this is it. Here comes the crock pot, the Alabama crock pot win, where they just kind of like slowly, you know, like drill you out. I'm pretty sure you and I were both excited about LSU just embarrassing Heisman Trophy winning Lamar Jackson in Louisville in the Citrus Bowl.
Yeah, but it wasn't, you know, that wasn't a good game either.
It wasn't a good game, but I enjoyed the performance. The performance by LSU was stunningly good on defense. They were really, really good. Is Darius Geis better than Leonard Fournette?
No.
Come on. He's got to be better than Leonard Fournette.
They're all the same. Remember you said the same thing a couple years ago about, you know, Jeremy Hill and Alfred Blue, and just every LSU running back is always... Every year they seem to have another all-star running back.
Does Malachi Dupree come back?
No.
Oh.
None of them come back.
So you make a one-handed grab in a national televised game and you leave. Is that how it works in the
They're all going to leave.
Oh, you're making me mad. Jamal Adams makes sense. He's like top five, I heard, last.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tre'Davious White's first round. Yeah, it's a,
yeah, he's top 20.
Really talented team. How they lost four games, I'll never know. I do like... retconning, I do like the Orgeron retaining of the position. I like it. I'm fine with it. And Matt Canada is coming in from Pitt, where he ran like that basketball on grass offense. And then you keep Dave Aranda, who's sort of the architect of the 3-4 that he wants to run now at LSU. So great stuff there. But your national championship game on January 9th is going to be Alabama-Clemson in a rematch, just like we had in the NBA. We had differing results in the NBA. Golden State got one, and tit-for-tat, Cleveland got theirs. So does that happen this
Alabama.
Week? Oh, come on. I was trying to build it up, and then you just shit on it.
As much as it would be nice to see Clemson win, Alabama's just going to slowly pressure cooker him down and unexciting.
It's going to be hard for Watson. Watson, though, is the type of quarterback that gives Saban's defenses like just tons of shit fits. Like, he hates the running quarterbacks that have a strong enough arm to throw in tight windows. And Watson can do that. And the receivers are really good at Clemson. I mean, Deion Kane. Is his name Deion Kane? I'm already forgetting. But one of them is named Kane. Just Kane. And then Mike Williams and the other one. I'm totally forgetting. I'm like totally losing track now. But yeah, it'll be a good game. It'll be a good game. NFL, any predictions for the playoffs? Just give me one prediction. You don't even have to give me a Super Bowl. We could talk about that later.
Well, didn't I think I said Steelers, Patriots.
Was that before the when we were gearing up and the season started?
Yeah, that was again. I think I said Packers in the West. So, You know, they're still out there. I don't know, NFL just every year just gets...
This one's a bore. This one is really a bore. And the injuries to the quarterbacks has just... It's going to drain, the NFL, the quality of play in the playoffs. Just drain.
Oh, that and... It's a horrible draft class for QBs, so you're going to see, a lot of, backup QBs starting, Glennon and, you know, what's his name for Chicago is going to be starting again elsewhere, and Cutler... You know, he'll have his starting job. It's just why? And
yeah,
it's going to be bad.
Tony Romo. You know Tony Romo's going to win.
Somebody will start him.
That's what I'm saying. He's going to go somewhere. It's one of those Drew Bledsoe, Tom Brady things where they basically said, Bledsoe, look, we like you, but we've got Brady's our guy, but we'll let you handpick wherever you want to go. So he said, okay, let me go to Buffalo. So they traded him to Buffalo.
Bledsoe has a ring. That's all that matters.
And Romo, well, does Romo get a ring?
If they win.
But will they win?
Probably not.
My bold prediction, the Cowboys will not go to the Super Bowl. I just think they're going to stumble somewhere.
Seahawks will probably upset them.
Yeah. Alrighty, that's going to be wrapping up this NBA team podcast here on this episode, the first one, 2017. Thank you, Adam. And on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Take care, guys.